This is Fighting Bob Radio, and a good Thursday morning to you. I'm Eric Shubring, and this program hosted with Ed Garvey of FightingBob.com, who will be joining us this morning, as well as a conversation with the minority leader in the Assembly, Peter Barca, with some thoughts on those issues before the State Assembly, state government, and the people of Wisconsin. We anticipate that conversation just any moment. Peter Barca, this morning on FightingBob.com, Fighting Bob Radio. Again, I'm Eric Shubring, and subjects of our conversation today will include voter ID, the action or the suggestions that there be a change in the selection of the Chief Justice of Wisconsin, education, comprehensive on jobs, technical college support, education support in Wisconsin as well. All of those things before the state's legislature and the state assembly. A number of bills have passed through the Senate by this time and are moving into the assembly for approval or disapproval by the state Senate. And there's a likelihood that those things will pass. And joining me now is Peter Barca. Peter Barca, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you on Fighting Bob Radio. Peter, as I was just mentioning for our listeners, a number of things that I know are of great concern that are moving over into the Assembly and a couple of things happening outside of the Assembly right now. Voter ID might be one of the most important. There's a federal case now.
Right.
Federal court. Many look at this, Peter, as simply an effort by the Republicans here in the state of Wisconsin and in many places in the nation to suppress voter turnout. What are your thoughts?
There's little doubt of that. I mean, obviously, it's part of a national Republican effort, not just in Wisconsin, but throughout the country to suppress turnout. And it's not hardly even thinly disguised anymore, because we've seen in a number of prominent cases in Pennsylvania, you had one of the leaders over there talking about the fact that this will assure that Barack Obama will lose re-election in Pennsylvania. And, it's very clear, you know, what the playbook is. And, you know, when this bill came up in Wisconsin, for instance, you know, we really challenged them. We said, well, you know, okay, you want voter ID. We're not really for this. We think it's voter suppression. But, okay, let's at least talk about, you know, where do you get a voter ID from? I mean, motor vehicles, which you got to wait in line. It's not even on a bus line in many places. Motor vehicles didn't even open in some places, but a few times a month. And we said, how about going to a town board office or city council office? Or, you know, so we proposed, you know, alternatives after alternatives, and it was very clear they didn't want any of those alternatives. They don't want to make it easy for people to vote. They want to make it difficult, and it's just so sad. And, of course, the test case in Wisconsin could not be more glaring, where you had a woman on the town board up in the Marathon County area who had worked there for 30-some years. As I understand it, she donated her salary, and she herself couldn't get a voter ID because she didn't have a birth certificate. So it's just so outrageous. And we're going to make it clear today. I'm going to report it first here. I'm fighting Bob because I appreciate all you do. We're going to make it clear today that if next Thursday they intend to bring a voter ID, despite the fact that it's in federal court, despite the fact that even, you know, Majority Leader Fitzgerald in the Senate said they're not going to bring it up, then we want to bring up reapportionment and to have a nonpartisan reapportionment. Because if we want to talk about really our democracy in Wisconsin and where we're going and people's rights, then it is long past due that we have a debate and a vote on redistricting reform.
Well, then certainly the reason why we have a Republican assembly, a Republican-dominated majority in the state senator, arguably perhaps not a Republican governor, but it is the root, is that redistricting, which was done so unusually in this fast redistricting.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because of the fact that, you know, they did it in secret. They actually had Republican members sign a secrecy oath not to tell the public about this plan that they were going to bring forward at the last minute and ram through with little public input, as they do in so many occasions. They spent $2 million of taxpayer money. We had proposed that let the legislative council, you know, be our attorneys. Let the public have access to, you know, all of the memos. Let's not have private memos that are done in secret. And, of course, they rejected that, so they cost the taxpayers $2 million. They put forward a plan that clearly was thrown out by the federal court. Let's not forget that. So that plan doesn't really exist. Now, of course, they can only, you know, in federal court, there were only certain issues that were up for discussion, so it mainly ended up being the Hispanic districts in Milwaukee. But let's also be clear on the fact that your key point that you're making here is absolutely true. Assembly Democrats, you know, got somewhere in the neighborhood of 175,000 more votes than Assembly Republicans did in the last election. That should translate into about a three-vote majority for the Democrats, but because of the way these lines were drawn, you know, they end up with an 11-vote majority. That's not democracy. That's not Wisconsin.
The Republicans in Wisconsin and elsewhere, and we should note, you know, Jim Wright, former Speaker of the House down in Texas, couldn't get a voter. He had trouble and may yet. He probably was granted a provisional ballot there because of his he did not have a photo ID, the appropriate ID for Texas. The sort of restrictions and, you know, draconian, really restrictive measures that these voter ID requirements are in Texas, here in Wisconsin, absurd, it would seem, in the face of the fact that there is negligible voter fraud here in Wisconsin or anywhere else in the nation, and that is the argued justification for having these voter IDs and restrictive voting requirements.
Right, and I think it's important for the listeners to understand because, of course, periodically what ends up happening is, you know, you'll have broadcasts and you have shows and you have, you know, meetings, and the public mistakes the idea of having a photo ID like you use to go to a pharmacist to get a prescription versus a photo ID that you need to vote with. And it's so much more restrictive for a number of reasons. First of all, you know, they're making it very narrow under what circumstances you can use photo IDs. For instance, UW students, you can do it, but vocational college photo IDs don't work. Well, what are we telling people about the value of vocational education? But worse than that, really, is the notion that the address is what becomes so vital. And this is where it hurts senior citizens and so many others that, you know, when they move from one place to another, any photo ID they have makes no difference when you go to a pharmacy to get your prescription. They don't care where you live. But for voting, obviously it has to be identical. And that's why the Republicans write this in such a prescriptive, restrictive way, is to make sure that, you know, they make it more difficult for people to vote. And for seniors who end up at times in temporary rehab centers or, you know, move to live with a family member, maybe because of failing health, all of a sudden they find themselves ineligible to vote unless they can somehow get to a DMV in time before the election, because let's not forget the Republicans also, you know, now have made it so you have to live someplace for a longer period of time in order to qualify to even vote. This isn't Wisconsin. This isn't democracy.
Peter, it seems self-evident that these voter ID laws should be thrown out, but that may not be the case.
Well, you know, it's difficult to predict what courts will do. Obviously, we're in federal court now. It'll be interesting to see what that ruling is, but, you know, it seems pretty clear that so many of these cases all across the country as part of this orchestrated Republican effort will end up in the U.S. Supreme Court at some point. And then all bets are off. I mean, we, you know, unfortunately, we have a very polarized U.S. Supreme Court right now where, you know, you've got, you know, a block, a near majority block that just consistently vote in whatever the Republican interests are, whether it's, you know, Bush v. Gore or whether it's Citizens United or whatever the case might be. And that's very troubling.
Well, so too in Wisconsin, and that brings me to another subject I know that you have a keen interest in speaking to, and that is the proposal that about how the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is selected.
Right. Well, since statehood, you know, we've had the same process for selecting the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And but the Republicans, you know, because again they've polarized the state and divided people, they want to make sure that they have their person sitting in that, you know, Chief Justice's seat. And they do this across the spectrum. I mean, but to go to this extreme because of the fact that, you know, they don't have their person who they can consistently rely upon to vote in the most conservative, ultra-conservative manner, they want to change the whole process that we've had since statehood. I mean, it's outrageous. And just yesterday, we saw a similar proposal with the GAB. You know, you had former Judge Dave Deininger, Republican, served in the Republican Assembly, you know, in the Assembly as a Republican, loyal Republican. We might have voted together 10% of the time, I'd be surprised, although he's a true gentleman. I think he's a thoughtful person. But that's the problem. They don't want people who are thoughtful people that are going to act in the public interest. They want people that will act in their political interest. They want to put in Frelick in place of Judge Deininger, because Frelick is much more of a hardcore partisan. He's donated to Republican causes, which you would think immediately would disqualify you from being on the GAB, given the whole purpose is to try to have judges that will judge based upon the facts in front of them versus the party who brings forward the issue before you. So, you know, there's such a keen pattern here, and I'm so glad that, you know, you all at Fighting Bob are helping to expose these things, because it's just never been more glaring. It just, at every turn, you know, they polarize the state. It's not even enough anymore to have Republicans. You have to be either a Tea Party Republican or a certain vote for the Republicans, and they want to change it from everything from the Government Accountability Board to the state Supreme Court.
Our guest on Fighting Bond today, Fighting Bond Radio, is Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca. Peter, to what do you account these divisions here in the state of Wisconsin and in the Congress where you once served?
Well, a big part of it is redistricting, quite frankly. You know, when you have seats that are, you know, overwhelmingly Republican or Democrat, for that matter, you know, then you have, you know, polarized a polarization that we see here in the state. You know, and in my home territory, you know, I represent the Kenosha-Racine area, and it couldn't be any more glaring. For 100 years, we've had a state senator that basically represented Kenosha County and one that represented Racine County. And so what did they do? They divided those counties and went from having a state senate seat in Racine, which had flipped back and forth virtually every election between Democrat and Republican, a true swing district where people had to respond to the interests of Democrats, Republicans, independents, to now making it so in Kenosha, which had been in Democratic hands, but certainly a much more marginal seat. So now you have rock, rib, solid, you know, Democratic seats in the eastern part of the counties where Bob Wirtz represents, which are now over 60% Democrat, and you've got over 60% Republican in the rural part of the district. So as the Kenosha News and the Racine Journal-Times, certainly not Democratic newspapers, have said, after the primary election, you might as well not even vote anymore. You know, democracy has been thwarted. And this should concern every single Wisconsinite. It is outrageous. And it is wrong that they're taking away people's democracy. And, you know, clearly, as extreme as it's gotten, it is long past time that we no longer allow politicians to choose their voters, but go back to voters choosing their politicians. And that's why redistricting is so critical.
And you'll bring it up next week in the legislature. You've taken us down to Kenosha, down to your area. Let me ask you about
if they proceed with bringing forward these other issues like voter ID and changing the Supreme Court justice, Chief Justice process, then that is our intent. We'll be bringing that up today and discussing that with them and letting them know that's our intent. We're not trying to spring anything on them. They're well aware of the sentiment throughout this state, and it's time to discuss it and vote on it.
Kenosha proposal by the Menominees to Menominee tribe to open a casino in Kenosha at the old dog track there. What are your thoughts on it? The governor has been delaying his decision. He's made some provisions about what need some requirements before he would approve it. What are your thoughts on that proposal by the Menominee and the opposition that it's received from Potawatomi and Ho-Chunk?
Well, you know, let me start with the idea that, you know, the initial criteria that the governor has put forward is, once again, you know, having the outcome of polarizing and dividing the tribes by saying that they have to sign off on them. We've never had that proposal with any casino in the past. But setting that aside, from day one, when we found out that the BIA had approved the proposal for the Menominee, clearly the poorest of the tribes in Wisconsin, but clearly, incidentally, the largest tribe in Wisconsin, going back around the time of statehood, they, you know, their tribal members were all throughout the state of Wisconsin. But from that first day, you know, I stated, let's have a win-win for Wisconsin. I don't want the Menominee and the Kenosha proposal to win and the Milwaukee and Potawatomi to lose, but I certainly don't want the Potawatomi and the Milwaukee project to win and the Kenosha project to lose. And it was clear to me that the Menominee were going to do what they ultimately did do 2 weeks ago when they submitted their proposal, which is to find a pathway so that they could make whole the other tribes, so that they could compensate them for any losses they might have. Well, I can't see how you could ever ask anybody to do any more than that. And so it seems to me that there is clearly a pathway to get to a win-win, and that's what I'm hoping that we can achieve here, is to find that pathway. And I certainly hope that the governor is doing what we expect of our governors, which is sitting down with the tribes, finding out how we can have a win-win, because obviously once you brought in the Hard Rock into this proposal, it became a whole different equation. It no longer becomes just a gambling casino. It becomes a whole entertainment complex where you'll have, you know, the Hard Rock restaurants and hotel and convention center. And the thing that startled me the most, and I actually didn't learn this till about a week ago, it'll bring 4 to 6 million new tourists to Wisconsin every year. That'll benefit everybody.
Mm. Peter, in northwest Wisconsin, another controversy, it is over the proposal of the Gogebic Taconite Klein Group to open the open-pit iron ore mine, some say the largest open-pit iron ore mine in the world, should it be approved. A recent poll by Superior University of Wisconsin-Superior Economics Department found that only 20%, 21% perhaps, of the persons in Iron County are in favor of the mine, and there are a growing number of persons, you know, it runs between 60 and 75, 80% of the people in the region oppose the mine, or at least have very deep concerns about it. And yet, because of, we could probably go back to redistricting, because of the nature of the majority, Republican majority in the legislature and in the state senate and the governor's office, this project is moving ahead in the face of the opposition of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, probably those most potentially affected negatively by this mine. Where to from here, do you suspect?
Well, you know, of course, there is a process that they have to go through in order to get the permits, and you know, it has to happen on a state and a federal level. Of course, you know, despite the fact of having three of the most thoughtful members of the state Senate attempt to bring forward a process that would resemble Minnesota, which ironically is the largest taconite mining state in the country, where you would have to, you know, coordinate the efforts of the state and federal government for approval and have a process similar to Minnesota where it seems to work. So Senator Cullen, Senator Jouk, Senator Schultz on a bipartisan basis tried to have a reasonable process. That was thwarted. But the part that, you know, is truly outrageous is in the 11th hour when Senator Tiffany came in with that surprise point of saying that, well, you know, we have to modify this proposal so we can expect pollution, that of course there's going to be contamination to our water. Of course, we are acknowledging now. Now, in all the hearings prior to that, that standard had never come forward, but clearly it was there to be able to survive a court challenge. But, you know, once again, in the 11th hour, when it was too late for the public to weigh in, despite this partisan redistricting, they bring in this standard. And, you know, it's just so incredibly unfortunate. And the disrespect that was shown to the tribal populations in this was just perhaps unprecedented.
How much should a local, you know, the region affected and the people there have their opinion play in the outcome regardless of the law?
Well, I'm so glad you bring that up because, of course, you know, that same state senator, Tiffany, now is bringing forward a proposal dealing with frack mining or sand and gravel mining to say that he wants local governments to have virtually no control any longer. You know, going to the heart of controlling health, safety, and welfare, he wants the state to be able to do that. And, of course, you know, if it were still the Doyle administration or a Democratic administration, you might not be so eager to do that. But the fact that you've got the Walker administration, you know, he wants to change the process, cut out the local units of government. And I had our village administrator from Pleasant Prairie in my office just a couple weeks ago. And someone that is not an alarmist, somebody that's a middle-of-the-road kind of guy, and he said, well, he said, don't forget, he said, you know, we would have a hard time regulating blasting in the middle of the night under what they're proposing. So he was clearly outraged, and he doesn't get outraged very easily. But again, they're trying to change democracy, change governance, so that, you know, duly elected people, that local, you know, local officials who are elected by their citizens to look out for their interest. And, you know, I've always said, and I thought we all agree in Wisconsin, that government is best when it's close to the people and responsive to their needs. They no longer, obviously, on the Republican side, despite their rhetoric, believe in government close to the people. They, you know, time and time again, in dozens of cases, they've taken away local control on issues, something used to be a cornerstone of the Republican Party. And it just shows how far to the extreme right the Republican Party has moved, how far to serve special interests they've moved, that they're just willing to change the whole, you know, basis of our relationship with local units of government to, you know, to appease special interests.
Mm-hmm. Peter, finally, and I know you have to move on to very important work there in the Assembly. Elections just Tuesday in a number of states, Virginia, of course, the mayor of New York City, a man calls himself a progressive, and many are saying, in fact, that is the case. It probably, or some would argue, that it ought to affect Scott Walker and some of the Republicans' approach to things as they look at what has happened in those elections where Tea Party-backed candidates have lost and progressives are winning. Here in Wisconsin, there will be a gubernatorial election in 2014. The Democratic Party of Wisconsin has selected, or she has become the candidate, that's Mary Burke. Kathleen Vinehout, Democratic State Senator from the 31st District, a Wisconsin farmer, appears to be, well, it at least is testing the waters and going around the state determining whether or not she can run a campaign. Some are calling for a primary. A former colleague of yours, Spencer Black, has said there ought to be a primary. It does good. It does good to have a primary. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, my thoughts are democracy should ring. And, you know, I'm very close friends with Senator Kathleen Vinehout. I think extremely highly of her. And she hasn't made a decision, obviously. She has to decide if that's what she wants to do and give up her state Senate seat and seek the gubernatorial election. And, you know, I talk to her periodically, and we'll see how that develops. Mary Burke, you know, obviously is a very strong, you know, candidate as well. She's been traveling the state, has won support from a lot of groups like Emily's List and Planned Parenthood and progressive causes like that, Senator Feingold's former organization, and so she's also a strong contender. But I, you know, these things have to happen organically. I mean, I don't believe in you know, the party structure dictating who the candidate should be. It should be based on, you know, who believes that they're in the position that has the, you know, the wherewithal that they want to put their foot forward. And if they do that, then, you know, I certainly have never been opposed to primaries. So it's a matter of what these individuals decide is in their best interests. And of course, you know, either one of these individuals would, I think, make a fine gubernatorial candidate to face off against Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter Barkin, well, thank you very much for being on Fighting Bob Radio today. Appreciate your time and wish you well, and keep up the good work.
Well, thanks so much, and thank you for all you do at Fighting Bob to get the word out. It's just so vital that we keep doing that, because as much as I think people in Wisconsin are engaged and are active and we appreciate them, they're hungry for information, and there is just so much going on that is so against our values and our heritage that we need to keep them informed. So thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Peter. State Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barkin. I'm Eric Schubring. This is Fighting Bob Radio. Broadcast of this program is, we hope you will help support the program here by contributing to Fighting Bob. You can do so at fightingbob.com. And a couple of notes about some of the things happening around the world. Of course, the International Panel on Climate Change is coming out with its report, and there have been a number of reports that have been leaked, if you will, or some advance reports saying that there is going to be a 2% increase in demand for food, or 2% decline in the ability of the world to produce it for the growing population and the shrinking agricultural areas and challenges to agricultural food production. 2% per decade, and what would that mean in 20 decades? No food, you know, difficulty with that. Much to be looking at, and of course, people are looking at what Tuesday's election results mean. Robert Reich writing that pundits who are already describing the victories of Terry McAuliffe in Virginia and Chris Christie in New Jersey as a return to the center of American politics. Rice says, that's confusing what the center is, confusing the center with big business and Wall Street. He writes that only a few decades ago, Terry McAuliffe would be viewed as a right-wing Democrat, and Chris Christie as a right-wing Republican. Both got their major support from corporate America. Both reliably govern as fiscal conservatives who won't raise taxes on the wealthy. The biggest game changer, according to Robert Reich, is Bill de Blasio, the mayor-elect of New York City, who campaigned against the corporate legacy of Michael Bloomberg. De Blasio promising to raise taxes on the wealthy and use the revenues for preschool and after-school programs for the children of New York's middle class and poor. Those who dismiss his victory as an aberration confined to New York are overlooking three big things, according to Robert Reich. First, the new demographic reality of America gives every swing state at least one large city whose inhabitants resemble those of New York. And second, de Blasio won, notwithstanding New York's position as the epicenter of big business in Wall Street, whose money couldn't stop him. And third, Americans are catching on to the scourge of the nation's raging inequality and baleful consequences of our economy and democracy. That's Robert Reich writing on Common Dreams today. Robert Reich, whose new film is out, it's called Inequality for All, and it can be viewed many places. As a result of demand for this program and extreme interest in it, it was here that you first heard the conversation with Kathleen Vinehout. Kathleen Vinehout in the conversation that was first broadcast on WOJB Radio in Northwest Wisconsin. And we're going to bring you that conversation here shortly on FightingBob.com. The conversation, Ed Garvey and myself, Eric Schubring, with Kathleen Vinehout. She is the likely, it is possible that she will be running for the governorship of Wisconsin, and we'll bring you that conversation here shortly on Fighting Bob Radio. I'm Eric Shubring. Broadcast of this program is made possible with your support. We hope that you will make a contribution to Fighting Bob at fightingbob.com. We offer you that opportunity as we may here on this program. And we'll bring you Kathleen Vinehout here shortly. Again, a rebroadcast of the conversation with her this past week.
There is a new Marquette University Law School poll, and it's interesting to note, Ed, that whether it's Wisconsin Public Radio or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, it begins, the headline is, "The race between Scott Walker and Mary Burke is a toss-up," and yet the numbers that Kathleen Vinehout receives in that same poll are identical to those as Mary Burke. And it'll be interesting to hear what Kathleen has to say about that and other issues as well.
Well, I'm sure you know what I think about the Marquette University polling operation.
Well, I know you're a great fan of Professor Franklin.
Right.
and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Right, and one of the reasons why I think it's so important that there is a primary is that if there isn't a primary, then the Journal Sentinel has all the excuses in the world that it needs to explain why they're not covering the race. If there's a hot primary, then they have to cover the race and the issues and at least get to be part of it.
Indeed. Well, let's welcome Kathleen in now. Kathleen Vinehout, welcome to WOJB. Very pleased to have you here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Great to have you on the air. Kathleen, you heard us mention the University of Wisconsin, University of Marquette, Marquette University Law School poll, but more importantly, perhaps, or more interesting, is the way that some of the state press is reporting it.
Well, I did find it interesting. I'm about even in the poll, and I'm not even in the race yet, so it makes me want to run.
Good.
Well, some in northwest Wisconsin, I suspect, will be very pleased with the likelihood of the possibility of your running. Kathleen, one of the biggest issues here in northern Wisconsin in our part of the state, and it really is a statewide and even a larger issue, is that of the Gogebic Taconite mine in the Pinoki Hills. Mary Burke has expressed herself on it. We know where Governor Walker stands. What are your thoughts?
The bill that was passed was a horrible bill. I tried to change it, and I've eventually voted against it. The bill needs to be repealed, as does the earlier bill passed in 2011 that changed the law related to wetlands, and it was definitely a prelude to this mining bill that passed in recently. I felt like there were major legal problems with this bill. First of all, the Republicans and the governor really dishonored the state by failing to work with the elected leaders of the tribes. The water protection for the tribes is very much in question. There's most certainly going to be legal challenges. The tribes are sovereign nations. Refusing to work with them was a horrible mistake. In addition, having separate timelines for the Army Corps of Engineers and the state was a very big mistake. It's that in addition to, is going to send this to the courts. And then finally, not even considering the Great Lakes Compact and the fact that we in all of the Canadian provinces and other United States states have signed on to the Great Lakes Compact. So when I look at the bill, I say, yeah, there's a lot of job creation, but it's a lot of job creation for a lot of lawyers.
Nothing wrong with that,
no. Speaking as a lawyer, Ed. Kathleen, the opposition to the proposed Gogi Big Taconite mine in the Pinoki Hills here in this region has been growing steadily. It's becoming vociferous. And, of course, the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa simply say no. They're downstream from it. Legal issues aside, and there are some that ought to be considered when it comes to the tribes in the locality, if the people of the region oppose it, why should that not be enough?
Oh, I think it is enough, and it's exactly what I've been arguing with the sand mines in western Wisconsin. Whether it's a mine in the north or a sand mine in the west, those mines have to be good neighbors. That means you don't destroy the environment, you don't take away the clean water, you don't put things in the air that cause people to get sick. It's pretty simple.
It seems simple, but then as you listen to the Republicans try to explain what they're doing, it seems even simpler, only it's not on our side, it's the other side.
Their argument is jobs, jobs, jobs.
Jobs, everything, it's always, you know, we'll create jobs, and you say, well, how many jobs? Well, we don't know. What pay are they going to have? We don't know. Will they form unions? Oh, we don't know. So what are we getting here? Except a pig in a poke.
I agree. My constituents keep sneaking into the parking lots of the sand mines and taking pictures of the big fancy pickup trucks with Texas license plates and posting them on the internet. Over and over again, I hear that the big jobs, the well-paying jobs, are the ones that are going to the people from out of state. I've heard that's true also up north. Yes, there are some trucking jobs, but those jobs could be come from all other industries. Agriculture, for example, there's a lot of trucking jobs related to that. This isn't the direction that I think a lot of people in the state want to go. We want to preserve our environment. We want to grow that tourism industry that comes from a beautiful place to live.
Kathleen,
one of the things that shocked me lately was the number of frack mines or sand mines that are now operating in Wisconsin. I mean, this is something that just sort of sneaked up on all of us, and suddenly the industry has just blanketed the state of Wisconsin with, I think, over 100 frack mines.
That's right, 105, and they're growing more every day. Trempealeau County is the epicenter of sand mining in North America, and there are over a quarter, 28 mines and processing plants in Trempealeau County alone.
Wow.
People want to be able to control that locally.
And that is came up just a week ago, this the local control of frack sand mines. Senator Tom Tiffany of Hazelhurst, a region representing a region where there are no sand mines, introduced a bill that would take away local control and protections of air, land, water, people from those sand mines. It had that public hearing. Apparently no vote, and maybe the Assembly won't deal with it, but I wonder if you would speak to that law specifically, Kathleen.
Or the bill is about what's going to happen to the land next door. Should that decision be made in the town hall in our neighborhood, or should the decision be made in Madison? Now, control over land has always been a local decision. And when these sand mine hearings have happened, the gymnasiums in my neighborhood where I live have been full. Hundreds of people in my little town have shown up to look people in the eye and say, when you make this decision, I want you to consider this. They don't want a nameless, faceless person in Madison to make a decision about what's going to happen to their land next door.
Well, that's for sure.
And this bill would impact more than simply these sand mines, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's a very important point. There are two parts of the bill. The first part would take away local police powers, which are used for health and safety, which would probably overturn moratorium in Trempealeau County. It would probably cause just about every one of those 100 agreements to either go into court or have to be renegotiated. But the second part of the bill is much broader. It affects every single part of the state. And that is that no local government, through their zoning ordinance or any other way, could put any restrictions on anything related to water, air, the use of explosives, and damage to roads. Immediately, when this bill was introduced and the counties association didn't agree to go against the bill. They just testified for information only. Ashland County was furious because 3 days before the bill was introduced, Ashland County was considering an ordinance to regulate the use of blasting. And what they were regulating was the use of blasting as it applied to asbestos-laden rocks, which clearly was within their powers to protect health and safety of the people that live in the county.
I'm Eric Schubring. We're with Kathleen Vinot this morning and, of course, Ed Garvey. Ed, as you know, Kathleen, you're considering a run for governor, and if you were to, there would be a primary. Ed, you've spoken and written widely on the subject of how a primary, you know, simply assists the whole democratic process. There's also a lot of money that's necessary to run for governor, Ed.
Well, certainly, when you think about the cost of running for governor of Wisconsin, it's now just totally ridiculous. We're talking about $20, $30, $40 million. No one I know of has the kind of money that can match that. So what we have to do is figure out a way to get people enthusiastic about a candidate who can run against Walker and win. And you build up that enthusiasm by winning a primary and moving from a primary to the general election, having laid out your plans during the primary election, and gaining support and excitement for your campaign. Without that, I can tell you what the Journal Sentinel will do. If there's only one candidate running for governor on the Democratic side, they won't cover it at all. I mean, they just won't bother because their view will be that it doesn't make any difference if they cover it.
Kathleen, how are you feeling right now? You've been meeting with lots of people around the state. You'd have to give up your Senate seat if you run even in the primary.
Yes, that's true, which is why it's a difficult decision. I've been listening and going across the state talking with people. I was recently, Saturday, I was in Polk and Price County. A lot of people wanted to talk about the mine. They wanted to talk about local control. They wanted to talk about what kind of communities they wanted to live in, they wanted to create, and what the barriers were. And, of course, a lot of times the barriers lead right back to Madison. They lead right back to the Capitol. We don't have enough money for schools. We don't have money to plow the snow. We want to create a park, or we don't have money to maintain the park we have. I believe that people want to have that dialogue about what's important to their communities. The problem with money in politics, and politics as a horse race and the only time you move ahead, what's lost is that discussion of what's important to our community. And that's the heart of democracy. We the people, what we are all about, what we want, what we together want to create. And I want to rekindle that spirit of community across our state, because I think that's the antidote to the propaganda that comes out as campaigns when they're run by lots of money.
Right. And Mike Tate, the chair of the Democratic Party, keeps arguing, as best we can tell, that he does not want to have a primary because he says if you only have one candidate running, you can put all your resources into that race. But the problem is that nobody's going to pay any attention to that race unless there is one. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Well, Kathleen, as you know, and you have spoken at the Fighting Bob Fest, Robert M. Fighting Bob La Follette was one who, chose his issues, his concerns, developed a platform, and then ran on the platform and warned about the influence of money in politics more than 100 years ago, the corrosive influence that it could potentially destroy democracy. Some feel, Kathleen, that we are deeply threatened by that very thing, if not that we have already lost our democracy as a result of money in politics.
Well, I feel like we stand on the edge of corporate control of a democracy. We see it in so many bills that come into the legislature that are written by wealthy lawyers hired by big companies that aren't even in Wisconsin, and they get matched with legislators through something called the American Legislative Exchange Council. They bring the bills home, they introduce them, and when we ask questions, when the Democrats ask questions about the bills, they can't answer the questions because They haven't written the bill. They don't even know the bill. And the bill's written in complicated legal language that makes it difficult for anybody to be able to understand it. That's just an average person, a farmer like me. But I wonder if not now isn't the time to be able to have that anecdote to propaganda. And I see the, you know, poll-tested pretty words and the answers that don't really answer questions, the talking points. I see all that as a symptom of this money in politics. But the antidote to that disease of money in politics is to rekindle democracy within our communities, to have that discussion in our communities about what we want our community to be.
Yeah, I spoke in Milwaukee on Sunday to the Unitarian Church Forum, and I would say everyone in that room favored a primary for the very reasons that we're talking about now. And yet we still hear from certain people on the Republican side who say, well, primaries are bad. La Follette made the point that if there's going to be a corrupt link in this chain, it'll come through the parties, not the open primary. If you have an open primary, you can't bribe the whole state. There's a great deal of pressure there. Would you be willing to participate in a series of debates if we were to be able to organize them so that you could go up against any Democratic candidate who's running?
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm thinking about, is that to rekindle that spirit of community around the state, to rekindle that discussion about what we want our communities to be and hence what we want our state government to be like.
Hmm. Well, I'm so old, I remember when Republicans used to say that the best government is the government closest to the people. Now what we have are corporations that have substituted themselves. And the Republicans seem to have forgotten their basic position. I think we've got to have debates and have them run not by the Chamber of Commerce or even by us, but rather run those debates through the League of Women Voters or others and get the issues out there so that people have a perfect understanding of why they're voting for or against a particular candidate. Without that support or without that knowledge, they're not going to get excited about the race.
Kathleen, voter turnout in presidential elections in Wisconsin, achieve almost, some of the highest in the nation, but like almost everywhere else, midterm elections and others don't turn out as many voters. But in either case, there are a great lot of people in this nation who fail to vote, who fail to go to the polls. How do we get them out? How would you get those persons who somehow have felt disaffected for whatever reason choose not to vote?
I'm going to answer your question by telling you a story. Back in 2006, I ran as a dairy farmer without health insurance, and I was trying to bring health insurance to my fellow farmers. I had no money, no name recognition, and had never been elected to public office. I spent a lot of time in groups, in house parties, in coffees, in machine sheds, at parks, talking with people about issues that were important. People got energized, they got excited, and in my little county of 13,000 voters, 13,000 people, not voters, but just 13,000 people, I was able to turn out 1,000 new voters, and 100% of them voted for me. And I could tell this by looking at the history of voting in that county, in Buffalo County. So the answer to your question is to have a candidate that energizes voters and speaks to the things that they care about, involves them in the campaign, gives them a sense that, oh my gosh, it does make a difference if I vote. And it hugely made a difference in 2010. In 2010, when I ran for re-election to the Senate, it was a huge GOP wave. And of all of the competitive seats in the state, I and Penny Bernard Schaber over in Appleton were the only two Democrats that won in competitive swing districts. And again, I believe it was because the way I was campaigning And what I was talking about was very different than the, what I call the poll-tested pretty words that go on all the slick brochures that get repeated on both sides of the aisle all over the state in these slick brochures that come right before election time. People don't like those at all.
But we get so many of them. And what has been and what is your advice for Kathleen as having been a candidate for, well, U.S. Senate and the governor's office?
Well, I think that she's doing exactly the right thing in educating the voters on the corrosive effect of money in politics, and her willingness to debate with any candidates who would get in the primary, I think speaks well of her position on issues. You could tell by listening to her this morning that there's a passion for the issues that she believes are important, and you've got to get out to talk to people and make sure they understand you really believe in what you're talking about. So my advice is to just stay on the road all the time, talking to new people, old people, and making sure that the Democratic Party does not get in the way of a primary.
Kathleen, one of the things we have not heard, we don't hear mentioned much. We do hear, you know, the middle class and those who aspire to be members of the middle class, but we don't hear much conversation about the poor, who will always be, except those who might suggest that, well, they'll always be among us and we'll do what we can.
Yeah.
What about the poor in this state of Wisconsin? Speak to those needs.
The governor and the Republicans in the legislature have really had a war on poverty. There are so many issues that I can point to that make it more difficult for poor people to get ahead. And I can't think of anybody that doesn't agree that we need to give people a hand up to help them out of poverty. I grew up in a very poor family. When I was young, my father made $4,000 a year back in the 1960s as a laborer. My mother was sick and stayed at home. We were on food stamps. It was a really difficult time for us. I know I've lived that time. My parents didn't even think it was a good idea for me to go to college. They thought it'd be wasted on a girl. We got to put up the few resources we have on the one son that was coming up. So I know how hard it is, and I know how important it is that we have this social safety net, this that helps hold people up. Having health care is a great example. So many farmers have ups and downs in their income. So many people working out in the countryside have three or four jobs, and none of them have any benefits, and some of them come and go because of the seasons. This society needs to say, to reach out to these people and say, hey, we're going to figure out a way for you to get health care, because we're going to make sure that you don't lose your home because of one bad day when you fell out of a tree and had a terrible accident and had so many medical bills. These are the very basics that our society should do. And unfortunately, these needs are not being served. They're being eroded. 92,000 people are being kicked off of Badger Care. This is just flat out wrong, and we need to change it. As a society, together, we need to change it. Let's make sure that we've got that support for people.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen, many in this country supported the idea of a single-payer health program. The United States is, you know, repeating what most people know clearly. I mean, surely you do. I mean, we're the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't have a national health care program. Instead, we have moved to this, Affordable Care Act, which has its merits and its many flaws, and obviously some problems with getting it delivered to the people because of computer and internet glitches. And I have to say, it's easy to say, well, yes, as President Obama did some decade ago, I'm in favor of single-payer health program. Easy to have said that. But we don't have that in his administration for some very probably obvious difficulty of instituting one. But what are your thoughts and what are your feelings? If you were the governor of Wisconsin, could you move to, as Vermont is attempting to do, a single-payer health program for people of the state of Wisconsin?
I can see down the road to get us to a world where everybody has health insurance in America and everybody has health insurance in Wisconsin. And there are pieces in the Affordable Care Act that allow states flexibility, especially once this system gets up and going, that allows us to get closer to a single-payer system. An example, and that's certainly where Vermont is headed. Single-payer means different things to different people, but when I think about it, I think about everybody being in that exchange or then that marketplace and using that competition to lower people's costs. I was one of the three Senate authors of the plan called Healthy Wisconsin, which was something that we put together in 2007 when I first got into the legislature. This is a plan that goes farther than Obama did, and I can see where we can create our own marketplace here in Wisconsin that's uniquely ours. I've written that bill. I've actually introduced it in three different sessions, and it's never had a hearing. But the work's already been done on how to do that. There are a lot of flexibility that the state has from the federal government, and we certainly could use that to help out all of Wisconsin.
Ed,
there's major issues that are just being ignored by the media as well as candidates at this stage. I mean, when we see that the race is nip and tuck, if you believe in the Marquette University Law poll, what's interesting to me is that, once again, the Marquette poll doesn't really get into the significant issues that are out there, and that's why I think it's so important that you have primaries and you can take on these issues and have debates where people will know where you stand, because you're not going to learn very much out of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Well, you know, many feel that we are maybe reaching a point, a tipping point in the consciousness, the awareness of the American people that things are drastically wrong. And it may be money in politics, it may be, you know, environmental issues, but some see it as, some are beginning to suggest that that we are seeing, you know, the failure of industrial capitalism, to work, not just for the people, but for the land, the air, the water, the very planet itself. And we may need some very great structural change. You know, maybe it's money in politics might be the first one, but there are so many things that sort of stand out as symptomatic of some serious ills that we face, Kathleen.
I believe that we have the power within our communities to change this, and part of our next step forward is rekindling that spirit of civic responsibility. We're not going to do this alone. We're going to do this by engaging people in discussions in every community across Wisconsin. When people see the TV and they see the ads, it's easy to fall prey to the propaganda that's coming out of that TV. But if you're having a conversation in your living room about the candidates, about politics, about your community, about what you want, that is the first step to rekindling that spirit of democracy, that civic engagement where people say, by gosh, I am going to take my government back and I'm going to do what I can. And the more that people are aware that they have a responsibility to say, this is what I want my community to be like, and that snowballs, it multiplies, it begins to change our society. And the people that are elected, they're forced to respond and to listen. And we can have that. We can rekindle that spirit of democracy in living rooms all across the state.
Ed?
I love it. I mean, that's the kind of enthusiasm we need. And if people think we can't win, I just think about Tammy Baldwin beating Tommy Thompson a year before the election. No one gave her a chance. But what happened was that she helped get people out to vote, and she won. And Obama carried Wisconsin. And it's quite within the power of the candidates to change things in Wisconsin so that Scott Walker can be out looking for a job. Maybe he can get one of those 250,000 new jobs.
Kathleen, have you got an idea when you will say aye or nay, yes or no, take the road as an announced candidate?
Right now, I am traveling all around the state. I have a lot of events that are scheduled between now and Christmas. I'm going to take some time during Christmas to think through all those different pieces that have to be in place, and I expect that I will make a formal announcement the second or third week of January.
State Senator Kathleen Vinehaus. She represents the 31st State Senate District. She's from Alma. She holds a PhD from the University of Wisconsin, and she is a farmer. And before that, on the program today, Fighting Bob Radio, Minority Leader in the State Assembly, Peter Barca. On behalf of Ed Garvey, FightingBob.com, I'm Eric Shubring, recalling all programs at Fighting Bob Radio, our archive, for your listening at your leisure. Join us again next week at 11 o'clock on Thursday for Fighting Bob Radio. Eric Shubring, for Ed Garvey, thanks for listening.